Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Learn Japanese Pod. You are listening to the Fun Friday edition of the podcast, where we talk to cool people doing cool things in Japan. Today is absolutely no exception because we are joined by the wonderful Peter.
Ah, welcome. Welcome. And we're in the best of scenarios underneath the wonderful fall Momiji, still in December.
We're standing in this beautiful garden next to this old traditional Japanese house in Futago Tamagawa. It's wonderful weather. It's a bit windy today, so I apologize if there's a bit of noise. And just to quickly introduce you, Peter, for people who don't know you, when you're not being an international man of mystery traveling around Japan like a rock star, where can people usually find you and what are you usually doing with your life?
For sure. Usually in Michigan, in the United States, near the Great Lakes, way up north, and brewing beer, and I do real estate as well, so commercial real estate. So these are kind of my things.
Shout out to Beards Brewery.
Yes.
Up in northern Michigan. Or the rumor goes that maybe you're Southern Canadian.
Southern Canadian. I don't know about that.
But it's a place I've actually wanted to visit for many years. And actually, we did a podcast before back in 2022 in June. I interviewed you over the interwebs, but we actually know each other because you were listening to the podcast. You came over to Japan. You called me up out of the blue and said, would you like to meet? And I said, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And we did. It was great. Now, remind me, 2018?
Yeah. November 2018. We were here for the American Craft Beer Experience.
Right.
And we were here for about 2 weeks. My business partner was along and my wife, and it was a good trip.
And I remember meeting your friends and colleagues, I guess, and they were all very cool. I vaguely remember we went to an owl cafe.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun in Harajuku. And then we went to Yoyogi too, which is just a great time. Always beautiful.
And for me, just one of the most fun things about doing this podcast is happy random meetings of happy random people, and we've been friends ever since. And you are a regular, would you say regular visitor, semi-regular visitor to Japan?
Well, as semi-regular as you can be with the world events since 2018.
With the zombie apocalypse.
We won't
mention the corona word. I mentioned it, but I'm sorry.
Knock it in.
I'm sorry. Down to business.
Yes.
I guess the first question is, you're obviously here in Japan. You're on a trip. So what inspired this particular trip this time?
Yeah. Going back to 2018, real briefly about what I was thinking about, the inspiration, I think, the super quick is, of course, like many people, I got into Japan through like video games, and then I got into work and busy, and then one day I was like, I should study a language. So 2018, I found your podcast.
Awesome.
I was doing Duolingo at the time.
Wait, sorry to interrupt, but were you studying any other languages apart from Japanese?
No, I had briefly studied German years before, but I was just trying to not waste as much time on my phone.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, we should totally study a language with my downtime. So that's what I started doing Duolingo, and really went into it, because then I got rediscovered like the cultural aspect that interests me as a kid with Japanese. And I got back more. I was always into anime, but got into more anime and some manga and trying to learn. And so this trip kind of that's what started the 2018 trip. And then since then I was like, oh, that was just awesome. We went there and I was like, we should go back for an extended time. I'd like to learn more Japanese. I'd like to be in Japan more. And I think long term, my wife and I would love to find like an old house and remodel it. I think I've talked to you about that. So
yeah, that's cool.
So it was our 10-year anniversary this year, and a few
congratulations.
Years ago.
Well,
thank you.
Nice.
So we few years ago, we started working on planning a trip, and that's this culmination, which is, as we'll get into, been a journey. It's been 11 weeks in Japan, so almost 3 months.
11 weeks, wow.
Kind of built it around that we get a 90-day tourist visa as Americans, so... I didn't quite go a full 90. It's going to be like 75 days or something.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you have well and truly caught the bug of Japan.
Yeah.
I think like many, maybe some listeners to this podcast, people, you know, first get interested in Japan through the culture, through video games, through anime, manga, sometimes martial arts, sometimes history, stuff like that. Oh, and just to let you on the random point about video games, we may have just purchased a Nintendo Switch.
Oh, that's amazing. Good work.
Thank you. I think my productivity is going to go downhill very quickly soon.
No, it's. I think there's something in relaxing that it rekindles your creativity.
Yeah. And also it's great. And I mean this in a good way, a bit of video game escapism to reset your brain. And actually the real reason is because I'm regularly beaten by my girlfriend's nephew's Super Mario Kart.
So you gotta practice.
I gotta practice because it's just embarrassing. They absolutely thrash me on every single Mario game. It's just embarrassing. So I'm practicing. I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready into this fight. So
that's great.
We're gonna have a rematch.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna show them who the boss is.
That's exciting.
One of these days. So anyway, your trip was 11 weeks. Tell us about your basic itinerary. Whereabouts did you go?
Yeah. So I think in inspiration for this trip, I'll say too, because this affects itinerary, was getting here and definitely as I learned more about Japan in the last few years, not being able to travel, watched a lot of YouTube and Instagram. And so certainly like abroad in Japan, which I'm sure many of your visitors are familiar with.
Chris Broad.
Yeah. He's done a great job. And and when I discovered him, a lot of the early stuff he was talking about was more North Japan. So I think that I always wanted to go rural Japan, which we didn't do on our first trip. We were just in Tokyo because, again, if you play like Zelda or those type of games, you see a lot of that rural Japanese, more like
in
shrines and that kind of influence. So I'll give you the super brief itinerary. We can talk as much as we want about it. But basically, we came into Tokyo, went north, kind of based out of Zao, which is a little bit south of Sendai City, rented a car and drove like over a lot of Tohoku, but certainly not all of it. We did a lot in Miyagi because that's where we were based, and then did a couple days in Morioka. Then we moved south into Shiga Prefecture, where I have a friend, and stayed a few weeks there. Did some cool stuff. And then went like a week in Osaka, Kyoto area. And then we went and based in Hiroshima for like 3 weeks and kind of just hunkered down, did some day trips over to like Onomichi and the Shimonami Kaido. And we went to Fukuoka and just kind of exploring around. I like to, and my wife likes to like settle a little bit in a spot so you're not super pressed. And I think we also... this trip, the other inspiration for it was to get away with all the stress of the last few years and reflect.
Right.
Usually when I travel, I work as well. But this time I was kind of had personal goals of like self-development stepping far enough away from the business to reflect on what I want to do with it. Goals, like some of the, you know, kind of let the creativity maybe come back by getting enough distance.
That's cool.
We want it to have downtime. I've been reading a lot of books, journaling a little, that kind of stuff. And if you're go every day and moving cities every couple of days for 3 months, I think you just get burnt out.
You can get what I like to call templed out.
A lot of
people will go to Kyoto and I have to visit every single temple, and it's like, actually maybe just take it at a slower pace. But going back to, you know, why you came here, I think it's really cool that you know, it's hard to take like even a week out from life, and you managed almost 3 months, which is fantastic. Yeah. Do you feel you managed to get a bit more perspective? Did you manage to kind of take a breather from the craziness of everyday life?
Yeah, I definitely. And so like the first month and a half, I really just, I wasn't checking email or anything.
Nice.
The last month I've been kind of like slowly re-engaging, which has been good too, but still quite a bit of space. So yeah, it gets you out of your routine. It gets you to think and reflect. And I think that's helpful, especially like the brewery we've been doing for 11 years and kind of like my professional career for 11 years. So you, when you're pouring a lot of creativity too into something, like you can get into ruts. And so you want to like step back. So you're like, how can I get my brain thinking and looking at it different? And that's hard to do with a week. Like you need enough time. Like a lot of times if I just take a vacation where I'm trying to not work, if it's a 2 week thing, like it takes at least the full first week just to like slow down a little,
right?
And then you're like already on the back half of your trip and
right no, so it takes time for your brain to absorb new information. The really interesting thing about your trip is it's not a stereotypical trip to Japan. First of all, it's quite long. Secondly, my stereotypical trip to Japan would be Tokyo, Osaka, maybe Hiroshima. But there's not many people, I think, who go up to Tohoku, like northern Japan. It seems to be somewhat unknown country.
Yeah.
It's not that well known in popular consciousness. It's not like one of the first places you'd think of visiting.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, obviously, I've lived in Japan for millions of years. I'm part of the furniture here. I'm fully dinosaur. I've traveled all over Japan, but actually Tohoku is still an area I haven't traveled that much around. So
I think they say, well, I think I've heard Chris Broad say before, because he was promoting Tohoku a lot early on in his channel, that want like 1% of foreign tourists make it into Tohoku,
if that,
which is pretty crazy if you think about it. Because if you're listening to this and you don't know where that is, look it up. It's like 9 or 13 prefectures, something like that.
Yeah, right.
You look at how much physical area of Japan it is.
It's huge,
and you like all those prefectures. There's so much going on. I think we'll touch on it, I think, in a little bit, but
it's very culturally rich, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it's an unfortunate idea, but maybe some people feel that Tohoku just feels like it's on the way to Hokkaido, right?
Yeah.
Because like a lot of tourists, I think, go skiing in Niseko in Hokkaido. So there's, I know like a lot of Aussie tourists come to Japan for the skiing, right? And they head up to Niseko, which has like the best powder skiing probably in the world.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I just learned from some random YouTube video, no claims on the veracity of this, but it's apparently Japan gets the highest snowfall in the world.
Yeah, I've heard that kind of thing in the mountains.
In the mountains,
it's like
70%
mountainous.
Yeah,
right. So you get a ton of mountain snow. So I guess the thing about Tohoku and traveling Japan is that if you can rent a car in the rural areas, I think people get scared maybe of renting a car in another country, but like we did it, it wasn't that hard. We reserved a car online, filled out some paperwork when we got here. Mm. You know, you go to a city, like we rented it in Sendai. We didn't try to rent in Tokyo and then drive out of the city.
Yeah.
And Sendai is a smaller city. But then we could get around and go mountain hiking, go to a lot of more remote things. And if you want to get away from the tourism and the crowds, like you, welcome to Tohoku.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would say, especially for places like Tohoku, very rural areas, you can't not have a car. You really need a car.
Yeah.
I mean,
Worth it. Like, it's worth, like, I feel like you're going to feel like you're taking some risk, especially if you're, like, from America and you're driving on the other side of the road and you're like, what if I get in an accident? And traveling is taking some risks, and I think experiences are often about taking some risks. So
as you know, I'm a recovering business English teacher, and one of my past jobs was actually doing English lessons for the call center staff at a car insurance company, because this was pre-pandemic. There was a lot more tourism in Japan, and so there were a lot more foreigners renting cars, And so the number of accidents was also going up. So they needed to train their staff on how to deal with those people. So that's a random vignette for you there. So any highlights, any big highlights in your trip?
Highlights. I think that, yeah, so driving through Tohoku, which we were talking about, I think was a super highlight for me. But also to get in rural and remote, like where we were staying in Zao, also like you had to have a car to get there. But then like we were in the kind of the mountain village and it was really cool. And you get just a different appreciation for Japan. That's like the natural and cultural and not the city cultural, which there's stuff.
Bit of a cliche, but it is true to say that Japan isn't Tokyo. Tokyo isn't Japan.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. And you really, if you get, even if you go to some of the other major cities, like Osaka, of course, is like a totally different culture.
Sure.
And Hiroshima is different. Kyushu, you know, we were only in Fukuoka, but that's very different. And so I think it's good to experience that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not your, if you were going to do a 2 week trip and you didn't know if you were going to come back, I would do half time in some cities and I would like take a week to go slow somewhere.
Sure. Oh yeah.
100%. I think that it's one of the things I was going to say is you have to get past the idea of I'm missing out on something, right? Because I think you're going to be like, oh, well, I spent this week going a bunch of places I never heard of and I missed going to this temple that was like a checkbox for everybody or going to this city and seeing the famous whatever.
Sure.
But I think if you get past it, then you find discoveries where you're like, wow, I didn't like... So many people missed out on this that nobody knew about, right? Like, and but there's always going to be more you could have done. So it's like you have to get past that and say, like, I'm going to embrace the experience that I have. I was in my reading, the one guy I think I told you before was he talked about meditation walking and he talked about putting like one foot lovingly in front of the other.
Right.
It was Richard Rohr, I think was his name, the author. And I loved that idea of just letting yourself wander and not having necessarily a definitive point that you're trying to get to, but like experiencing the world around you without this singular focus on getting from A to B because you miss a lot in between. Right.
Yeah, like you're trying to... You know, the idea of like just checking boxes. I've seen 10 temples today.
Right.
For example, just a practical recommendation. If you go to Kyoto, I mean, if you want to go crazy, but I would say do one thing in the morning and then do another thing in the morning and that's enough.
Yeah.
Like maybe, you know, visit Ryoanji, which is like really beautiful Zen rock garden. And then in the afternoon, you could go see Kiyomizudera, which is this like super beautiful, one of the main temples in Kyoto. Just do two things. That's it.
And like Kiyomizudera. So we only spent 2 half-days in Kyoto.
Yeah.
And Kiyomizudera was awesome. That was one of the half-day things we did. Yeah. But I couldn't tell you like how... Again, singularly focused people were on like the main temple because there's like these garden grounds around it and you can step a little bit off the beaten path and it's still, there's still people. I'm not trying to say there's not, but it's like going from like shoulder to like spread out and you can like find a little Zen moment and enjoy like a reflecting pool that no one is crowded around, right? Versus saying like we all have to get the exact same shot. And that's part of the missing out, right? Feeling like I have to get that photo that everybody else got. So I like, and I'm not saying I'm above that, right? Like there's something cool about that, but I'm also like, I want to find somewhere that maybe no one else is taking a picture of and I want to just kind of experience that moment. And so I think it's worth looking for those moments too.
I've talked to Brother Ben, my brother, who's a tour guide in Kyoto. And I said, I read this really interesting article about this kind of boom in Japan off the beaten path. Because obviously Kyoto, the biggest problem with Kyoto is the over-tourism. There's like a million people want to see the same thing. So the bad news is there's a million people who want to see the same thing. You're shoulder to shoulder. There's just too many people. Everyone trying to get the same Instagram shot. But the good news is, like you said, all you need to do is just walk like 100 meters up the hill or 50 meters into the forest, and there's just less people. So if you just stray just a little bit from the main thoroughfare, you can actually find some pretty cool, new, unique places, and it's not just absolutely packed with tourists. Although I do warn you, people going to Kyoto, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I mean, shoot, like, look at us. We're standing under these trees with this traditional building.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Some people are walking by, but not a lot.
No,
right? You can sit here and enjoy, like, reading or, like, journaling in your book, or just, like, smelling the air. Yeah. Or, like, so.
And this is this place here. This is Futako Tamagawa. This is kind of like a sleepy suburb out, you know, in Tokyo.
Yeah.
It's generally on a weekday, this kind of area, there's not that many people. You know, everyone's working.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my other recommendation to people visiting Japan is try going to a random station you might not have thought of going to.
Yeah.
Because you'll be surprised. You'll find there's just amazing stuff everywhere.
I was going to mention that too. Like, you can get off in another city everywhere. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small.
Sure.
And there's this idea, ekimai, right?
Ekimai, like, right.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, yeah. Find the side of the station where all the stuff is. Because usually most of them have, like, a little strip. Sometimes it's a small town strip. Sometimes it's a big development.
Sure.
Mall type thing. But it's all the stuff in front of the station, ekimai.
So. Actually, this is kind of like a segue to kind of what we're talking about anyway. But did you have any, after this particular trip, do you have any kind of general recommendations, like things to do and things to avoid?
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for transitioning us. I did want to throw two quick highlights.
Let's talk about them.
Just because they were personally big highlights for me was, we biked the Shimanami Kaido, which is across the Seto Inland Sea.
Yeah.
And if anybody doesn't know what that is, just Google it. There's a few videos on it. It's pretty amazing. So I won't go in depth there, but definitely a highlight. And then the other thing is we made this collaboration beer with Hikone Brewing.
Right.
And I want to mention that. So they're in Shiga, and that's probably a spot most people aren't going to visit. But Shiga has Hikone Castle, which is a really cool castle. It's like a national treasure, and then they're expecting to get World Heritage status pretty soon.
Oh, awesome.
So it's a cool place, and Michigan is a sister state with Shiga, and so we paired up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the connection.
Oh, that's the connection.
Yeah. So definitely check out Hikone Brewing and Beards Brewery. We collabed on it. But that leads into my last point, which is, and I know a lot of people maybe are studying Japanese, and so they're kind of getting involved in the online communities and stuff. And probably my biggest highlight was meeting people, because, like, I had spent a lot of time online kind of networking. And so I have a friend in Shiga. I got people I knew in Fukuoka, and like, some of that wasn't the whole trip. But if you can meet some people who live here, if you can network online a little and get to know people, and then don't be afraid to reach out, and they maybe might be busy. Also, don't get your feelings hurt, because people have lives and they're busy too. So you got to respect that. But I think it's cool, you know, to get, because it's harder to get in and just interact with a lot of native Japanese people cold turkey, right? So if you can even network where there's one person you kind of know that could bring you to an event you wouldn't otherwise go to and meet some locals.
I think that's a really good recommendation. I 100% agree with that. Definitely, if you can network with people who live in Japan, whether they're Japanese or foreigners living here, it'll make your trip 100 times more interesting, just to get, like, locals to kind of show you what's what.
Yeah.
Show you around. Absolutely.
My friend in Shiga, who I kind of met through the sister state thing, and a lot of states have sister states, right? But he's, you know, from Michigan. He lives here, and he's got a whole story. But he, you know, he just liked connecting. We would do video calls a lot so that he had a connection back home, like what's going on, right?
Cool.
I mean, he has family and stuff, but it was a little different perspectives. But then when coming here, then he introduced me to the people he knew at Hikone. Yeah. We were able to put this brewing together. And so I think, you know, it's not like you're going to find a random native Japanese person most likely to network online, but find somebody that you have some connection that you can develop that relationship, and they can introduce you to things you might not otherwise find.
Well, actually, the other day we did a Learn Japanese Pod get together. And shout out to Chef Katie and her team. When we did that, one of the people who came was a guy called Max, who's actually a Japanese guy. And Max, he actually, I think he joined the Discord channel and he just wanted to interact with foreigners who were learning Japanese. And it was great. He was just a random Japanese guy who joined the forum and it was wonderful to have him along. And we could practice our Japanese with him. And big shout out to you, Max. Thank you very much for coming along to the meetup the other day. It was wonderful to see you again. But those, that you know, the people that you meet through these random interactions really make the trip a lot more special. There you go. Well, hey, if you're planning a trip to Japan, reach out to Peter and I. By the way, just going back to Hikone Brewery, what was the name of the beer? Motto Hazy Kudasai.
Yes. Motto Hazy Kudasai.
Motto Hazy Kudasai is the name of the beer. You kindly gave me a bottle.
Yes.
I gave it to Achan. She had a taste and it passed the Achan test. She really liked it. I love that beer. If you guys are doing another run, I'm going to buy 2 crates of the stuff. It was absolutely delicious.
Good. Yeah, we're going to brew it back in Michigan on our system when I get home. So that'll be fun. Oh,
fantastic.
Too.
Oh.
If you're in Michigan listening, then you can come find Beard's Brewery and try it that way. And then come to Japan and try it at Hikone and see if we matched up.
Matched up. I'll put a link to Beard's Brewery on the podcast post on the website. So please do check it out. I would be remiss to not bring this topic up, which is Japanese. So you have been studying Japanese for a number of years. Did you learn any new phrases on this trip?
This was interesting. You had given me questions ahead a little bit to think about. And I was thinking about this one. And I was like, oh, that's hard. Yeah. What did I learn new? So a couple thoughts. One is like I'm traveling with my wife. And so we spoke English a lot.
Yeah.
And so if you're traveling with English companions, you have to really work to use your Japanese a lot of times.
Sure.
So I definitely did that. But what I had a few examples of things that maybe weren't new, but were cemented experience.
Right.
I think that's the thing. So we went to the Ghibli's Grand Warehouse, Daisoko.
Right.
And so soko is like a word I had learned, like
warehouse soko.
I couldn't have pulled it out of my memory,
sure,
because when do I use that word?
Sure.
Right. But then like going somewhere like that and seeing the kanji and like putting it together, and now that is a word I have, right, that I can bust out. And then I had, when we were hiking in Nara on like a hiking trail towards this waterfall, then there was like a road that we crossed and I ran into a random Japanese guy, a couple hiking, and I was like, michi chisai or whatever.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
He was like, semai.
Semai.
I knew semai, but like chisai is way more for small, right? Common to think of. But now if I'm talking about something narrow, I will always use semai. Because like I interacted with that guy and just that little interaction, I wasn't even making big complex sentences. I think I was trying to say ipotsuko. Is that one way?
Oh, ipotsuko. Yeah.
Because I thought the road was so small, it might be a one way.
Yeah.
And he was, and basically said no, but then he was, you know, I said, well, because it's small, I thought that. And he was like, semai. But anyways, those interactions can really cement things you've learned. But like, how do you make them practical? Like, I won't forget that now because I had the experience.
So I think that is a beautiful illustration of how you really learn vocabulary. I've always said that there are two meanings you need to know for a word. The first meaning is just what it means. So for example, soko means warehouse. The other meaning is, what does it mean to you? Because you had that specific experience, it cements in your brain. And also semai as well. I used to say heya ga chisai, which is fine. They'll understand what you're saying. Small room. But it's more common to say heya ga semai.
Yeah.
It's like narrow. That's how you say it in Japanese. And again, through trial and error, making mistakes, interacting with native Japanese people in real situations that have a meaning for you, will cement those meanings in your brain. I reckon you probably learned a lot more Japanese than you think you have.
Yeah.
On this particular trip.
And what I was saying is, like, while I had maybe quote unquote learned some of those things, like even like fukuro iremasu ka.
Yeah.
Like I'd learned that, but it still took me several weeks at the konbini to like really pick it up. And because it'll blow by you really fast.
Sure.
Right. And so some of it's just learning to listen better, and some of it's cementing the meanings where you learned it as a vocabulary word, but now, like you're saying, you have a context for it that really helps you remember. So
I think you have a context and it has a personal meaning for you.
Yes.
So if you're talking about inu means dog, whose dog? Your dog? Your friend's dog? How does the dog play a part in your life? Once you have that meaning for yourself, I think you can remember it. That's really cool. And that's how you consolidate the language.
Yes.
When you learn a new word, it's kind of floating at the top of your head and you use it more and more in context. It kind of gets deeper into your memory and then you can use it without even thinking about it.
Right, for sure.
I would finish off by maybe a bit of a difficult question. I'm not sure is, has Japan noticeably changed since your visit in 2018 and compared to your visit now?
Yeah, so this one, I don't feel like I'm expert enough to say, because I went to so many different areas I never went in 2018.
Yeah, sure.
I do think that maybe it is a little busier. I do think since tourism has opened, people are back. Like even going to Gotokuji, which we did in 2018, like we went and like they were sold out of the Maneki Nekos. There was like a lot of people. And I remember in 2018, there was like nobody there at Gotokuji. And
so for those of you who don't know, Gotokuji Temple is famously known as the Cat Temple. They sell these really cute cat figurines called Maneki Neko, which are supposed to bring you money and good fortune.
Lucky cats,
right? And it's a really, really cool temple. It was actually under construction for a couple of years. Okay. And you were lucky because when you came now, they just finished the construction.
Yeah, there was one area I think that was still like there, but it was open mostly. Yeah. I think the story was like a samurai went through or something. It was a storm and he was going to. It had something to do with him getting like stuck or whatnot, but then this cat came and
saved him,
was waving, and he saw it led him to the temple where he could get like refuge, and then they like donated money to the temple and then it built out or something.
Oh yeah,
like
and then he developed the he built the temple.
Yeah, so that was kind of like it was luck for him, and then he returned the luck to the temple. So very cool.
It seems like, I guess in the main tourist areas, it's more busy, right?
Yeah.
It's busier.
Right? I do think so, a little bit. But that's where we talked earlier, like, a lot of Japan that's not busy.
Sure.
But, I do really, I can't stress enough, I think it's getting over the mental idea that I'm going to miss one of the tourist checkbox things and saying I'm okay with that because it's going to be a lot of fun what I do see.
If you're worried, people, don't worry, because whatever you see in Japan, you can visit more in your next trip. Japan will always be here.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't know the answer to this, but when might your next trip to Japan be? And what do you think you'd like to do on that next trip?
Yeah. So we're hoping to make it, my wife and I, more of a annual trip to Japan, which obviously it was 5 years this time with all the things that happened, but annual or semi-annual, like you talked, we like to travel. And so there's some other spots in the world we want to hit that we haven't been, but we do travel. That's like our core thing is finding time to travel. So hopefully next year, which is Year of the Dragon, and there's a lot of cute dragon things already popping up. So we're like, oh, we got to come back for that.
Yeah.
A fall is a beautiful time and it's very extended. We came in fall. It's also slower business time for us, but it's also, I love fall colors and leaves, and it's easier to time, I would say, than probably the, Hanami.
Hanami is kind of difficult to time because the sakura is generally a bit fickle when it blooms.
Right.
I would say though for this year, autumn this year, or fall for our American friends, fall was slightly later this year because we had an unusually warm kind of autumn, if you can call it that. Dolgen released a funny video the other day. He said, Japan has three seasons. It's spring. No, it's winter, spring, summer, and what happened to Aki? What happened to autumn? Because it was just like so warm. It's like we didn't have an autumn. We didn't have a fall. So I think a bit of climate change here, but it's...
We found it now.
We are standing under, as we said before, these beautiful Momiji trees. We'll take some pictures, stick them on the post on the website for you to see.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be earlier. When we were here in October, I was expecting more of this, and we're catching it more here late November and early December. So,
right.
Hey, I would give a few other shout outs for people traveling here.
Sure.
Just from a strictly practical standpoint. If you can and check your phone plan and stuff, but getting an eSIM, that's something that's different from last time. It's easy to get those now, and they're just data plans.
Okay.
And they're cheap versus like turning on an international plan for your phone.
Yeah, right.
But it is really helpful to have a GPS, especially if you're driving around North Japan.
Right.
And there's not always service, but at least when you get near something, you can pick it up.
Okay.
So I would do that, and I would get Suica on your phone if you can. And those are the cards you use on subways, and you can load them, and it just makes... Those are just some practical things I thought that we did not have the first time we came to Japan. And so when you said, has it changed? I was thinking, well, those seem to be now more available to international people.
Yeah. If you do have the phone that has the functionality for the Suica card or the Passmo card, that basically the IC travel card, definitely bring that. I'm a bit out of the loop. I'm sure someone can correct me on the Discord channel, but I thought that there was like a shortage of like IC cards and you couldn't buy any. I'm not sure if that's still the case. But the black belt level version of this skill is to have it on your phone. Like I've got the Passmo card on my iPhone and I don't leave home without it.
It just works.
It just works. Sorry, that sounded like a commercial there, but it's true. Yeah, definitely.
And then if you're a relatively sedentary person, Japan, you have... I saw somewhere like a meme. It's like, you can't love Japan without loving this. And it was like stairs. And it was like, but no joke, like get ready to walk. But that, to me, walking through cities and temples and places, a lot of walking is how you can experience at a different level.
Yeah.
And so...
And the good thing is you can walk. Like, Tokyo is more sprawling. Obviously, you do need to use public transportation, which is actually great, by the way. But cities like like Kyoto or Osaka, they're more walkable. There are neighborhoods in Tokyo you can walk around. But yeah, walking is part of the pleasure of visiting Japan. It's not like, I don't know if you went to, I don't know, like LA, it's maybe a bit harder to...
You can't walk.
You can't walk.
There's that song, Nobody Walks in LA.
There you go. There's
an old one. But I think that, you can walk here. And even if you're subwaying around, like yesterday, I went all over Tokyo and I still got 22,000 steps, even though I was on subways. Because okay, I went here and then I walked around that area and then I walked over to the other subway line that I took to here. And then so it, just be ready for steps.
You look like you're quite a healthy guy. You haven't packed on the pounds like I have. So,
that's a bonus. You can eat all the food you want and you don't gain any weight.
Walk it off. I mean, when I lived in Osaka, one of my, weekend pastimes is to get on a bike with my buddies. Shout out to Rob. And we get on our bikes and we would get lost in the back streets of Osaka.
Yeah.
And it's just a pleasure just to kind of either walk around and get lost or cycle around. But get ready for some walking, people. There's no excuse. Don't be lazy. There's so much to see and do. It's a running joke on the podcast. This is like Andy, who's a regular on the podcast, said, if you want to eat something, if you want to eat something delicious in Japan, put a blindfold on. Spin you around, just walk in a direction, you'll hit like a delicious restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's the same for like interesting stuff to visit. There's just so much stuff to see and do.
So much.
Peter, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I hope the next time we hang out will be in Michigan.
Yes.
Because I kind of owe you two trips. You've been over here twice. I've wanted to go to Beard's Brewery for like ever.
Yeah.
And I've also got like a bunch of friends. Shout out to Ted in Chicago. who's in, he's also a good Learn Japanese Pod listener and a good friend of mine. So there's that corner.
Time for
States.
A Midwest
I think it's
trip.
Time for a Midwest trip. Yeah, I would love to go up there and also see, you know, Michigan, Lake Michigan. That would just be amazing.
Yeah.
So I will say yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Peter, good luck for the last couple of days of your trip.
Thank you.
Safe travels home and send me your pictures.
Yes, will do. Thank you.
And for you, dear listener, thank you very much for listening to this podcast. We will be back soon with more podcasts. Do check out our website at learnjapanesepod.com. And that has links to absolutely everything you need to know about, including our Discord channel, our online Japanese courses, and all that good stuff. I will see you soon. Please keep studying your Japanese. And see you on the next podcast. Yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Matta ne.